Hey everyone, I'm trying to get to TwitchCon 2018 this year, but I need your help. How, you may be asking? Well, every little bit counts, and we're trying to offset the cost of travel and accommodations through donations on our Twitch channel. So for the next month, we have a goal of $1,000 that we're trying to hit. If you can, head on over to donate.gamertagradio.com to support, and hopefully I'll see you at TwitchCon.
Ladies and gentlemen, podcasting since 2005. You're listening to Gamertag Radio with your host, podcaster Hall of Famer Danny Pena, the always opinionated Paris Lilly, and from outside of the norm, Peter Toledo. This is Gamertag Radio.
All right, welcome to Gamertag Radio, episode 798. And this is your host, Danny, and joining me this week for this episode of Gamertag Radio is Paris. What's going on, Paris?
Hey, what's going on, man? We got some breaking news.
Breaking news. Actually, the plan was we were going to just release an interview with Dink Takahashi. I'm going to play that later on this episode. But I had to make some changes, man. Yesterday was some breaking news with Microsoft during their Inside Xbox. They announced the return of XO.
We're going to be at XO 18. We're holding it at the same time we're doing our fan fest in Mexico City, where we just already have thousands of fans that are going to be there. So this year, it's going to be a global event. If you're at home, this is just like the Inside Xbox show. You're going to be able to participate from home with everything that we do online. But it's also always great to be there with our thousands and thousands of fans in Mexico celebrating their love for Xbox. So XO18 is coming back. Love it.
All right. So XO18, Mexico City, November 10th. Thousands of people in attendance. Everyone joining Inside Xbox for a huge special show online.
Yeah.
That makes it sound like there should be some news, right? So what type of things can we expect?
Yeah, you know, if you go back and maybe on YouTube somewhere, look at some of the old XOs. We're using great third-party support. I think we're going to have that. We'll have first party show up in a big way. Make sure that we have news there to pop because we know our fans love that. In events, we can celebrate what it means to be an Xbox fan, a gamer, with our great third-party and first-party studios and other things that we can bring. So I think it's going to be a lot of fun.
Paris, a lot of people never even heard of XO. Us have been, you know, into the whole Xbox console for years. This goes way back, even the early days of the original Xbox. For those that don't know, you want to explain for people that don't know anything about XO?
It's in a nutshell, it's what PlayStation Experience is right now. But it was for Microsoft. It was for the Xbox brand. And the funny thing about it is when this announced, like I remember it from like around 2005, 2006, that's when I was really into it. But this had been going on since 2001. And I guess I just forgot that it was going that far back. But it's basically just an event that Microsoft holds, not in the United States. They typically do this internationally and they show off some of their upcoming games, products, etc., you know, at this event. Like the one that I remember vividly was BioShock, which was XO6, I believe it was. But, you know, they've shown Halo 3 there. They've shown Mass Effect. I mean, on and on. The titles go. Splinter Cell was shown off there, etc. So this is a good thing. This kind of goes back to something that we've been talking about the past couple years when it comes to E3 and just these publishers holding their own event to show off their game so they can kind of own the media cycle. So it's interesting that they're doing this in early November, whereas we know PlayStation Experience will come in December. So this is now Microsoft's opportunity to kind of give a hint to some of the games that they're working on and some of the partnerships they may be having with some of their third parties. And you know, the fact they're doing it in Mexico City, they're expecting 10,000 fans to be there. It's just going to be a big celebration. Again, this is good. This is a great thing. I'm excited that it's coming back because this is something that we need Microsoft to be doing and the Xbox brand to do.
Yeah, and during our conversation, Paris, when we were talking over the phone, we were like, yo, this is good. And I even mentioned this to Paris. I was like, I'm getting this old school vibe of like the original Xbox days, hungry, great content. Like that's the vibe I'm getting from Microsoft. And I think that by them announcing this, this is the beginning of what's next with the company. right now they're probably just going to show and announce stuff that's for this console. But this is the beginning of things to come in the future. More games, the next-gen console. And I think that's the plan, to start with this, create a buzz, and just announce big, big titles. Paris, a lot of people might say, oh, but this is like kind of like inside Xbox and so on. We have to disagree with this, man, because XO is a really, really big thing, not only for Microsoft, but like you said, third-party companies too. They'll show their games. They'll announce their games at this event. So I'm going to take it back to XO1. This was in France in October 2001. Here is where Microsoft announced a new game. At that time, they had a title, Project Eagle, which later became Fable. That's what they announced that at XO1. Also, Brute Force and other games that was highlighted here was Project Gone to Racing, Fusion Frenzy, Halo, Combat Evolved, Bloodwake, Amped, NBA, Inside Drive, and a bunch of other games. And this is where also Sega showed Jet Set Radio Future, Sega GT 2002, and Gun Factory at XO1. Now, XO2 was in Spain, and this is where, again, Microsoft showed Cameo, Conquer Live and Reloaded, Perfect Dark Zero, Project Gotham Racing 2, and also Xbox Live support for Tom Clancy's Splinter Cell. What else? Okay, so XO3, France 2003. Again, they show a bunch of other games. And again, they showed over 100 previews of games, including Halo 2 at this event. And they were showing games that was coming out during the holidays. So we could continue on and on. I know Paris mentioned to me that this is where he found out about BioShock for the first time. Like I said, they showed Gears of War, other games, really, really big first-party title games and also third-party title games. What are the chances, Paris, of Microsoft showing and announcing big, big games at this year's XO18?
Well, it was like I said when we were talking offline, I think this would be their opportunity to reintroduce us to Joanna Dark. I think we know they're working on a new Perfect Dark game. Why not? Why not let this be the event to announce to the world that, yeah, Joanna Dark is coming back? You know, it's not anytime soon, but just to get people talking about it. Look, we already know Fable's coming. We already know what they're doing with Halo. We already know with Gears. So to me, of an unannounced game, that would probably be the biggest one that they could show that would be exclusive to them. And, you know, we know these other studios, the Santa Monica studio specifically, is working on a big title, which we don't know what's going to be yet. I think it's probably too early to hear from them, but I think for me, I think the Perfect Dark one would be the biggest one. From a third party standpoint, you know, and this is like you said, I think Sam Fisher, I mean, you know, Splinter Cell has always been tied to the Xbox brand. This would be a great time for them to let us know that Splinter Cell is coming back, because we kind of were doing, just trying to logically thinking out Ubisoft holiday 2019. We already know Assassin's Creed's not going to happen next holiday, right? So they're not going to do a Ghost Recon. Division 2 is coming earlier. They've already done Far Cry. What could they drop in the holiday? We don't think it'll be the Pirates game. That just doesn't seem like that would be their flagship holiday title. You know, that seems more like a spring type of game they would launch it. So probably 2020 at this point. It's either Watch Dogs 3 or it's got to be Splinter Cell, right? It's got to be.
Yep.
Yeah, you know?
So, it makes sense.
So you announce it at XO18 and then we get more information in 2019 going into E3 and then it launches in the holiday. I think that would be a smart move for them. The other thing that we're even thinking of Ubisoft is, we know with Division 2 beta is coming. We already know that Xbox has the marketing deal with the Division 2. So that might even be a great spot to announce, yep, here's where when you can get the open beta or the closed beta, whatever they're going to decide to do for the Division 2. I think put a date on it. That would also be a nice announcement for them. And you know, I don't want to steal all your thing. You brought up the Anthem stuff, so yeah. I'll let you talk about that.
Yeah, I think this will be a great opportunity to also show Anthem. I think it would be better if they will also have it playable, like maybe have the, you know, maybe the beta, the demo that's coming out in February. Sure, like a short, you know, a short video of it, and people get the chance to play, get hands on at the event of Anthem. But here's one thing I definitely got
to
bring up.
I want to pause you on one thing since we're talking to Anthem. I just quickly. So, not going to say who it is, but someone from the Anthem team reached out to me earlier this week, and we had a great conversation about Anthem, all my concerns about it. They were heard. They hear us. They know what we're thinking. Basically, in a nutshell, be patient. More information is coming. And again, shout out to BioWare and Anthem team for listening. You know, that, you know, like they reached out to me. So I just think that's awesome. And like I said, I want that game to be great. So I'm going to now be patient and wait until we get more information after having that conversation. So I just want to put that out there.
That's good. It's all about communication, man. If there's communication, I'm cool with that, right? So the last EXO event was in 2006, and this was in Barcelona, Spain. So here are the games that they announced at this event back in 2006. Halo Wars, Halo Chronicles, Banjo-Kazooie Nuts and Bolts, BioShock. They showed Splinter Cell Double Agent. They showed like a footage of that. They also announced Splinter Cell Conviction, that this was an exclusive for PC and Xbox 360. Of course, they even showed the HD DVD drive, and Assassin's Creed footage, actual gameplay. This was the first time that the world got to see the original Assassin's Creed game that was coming out for the Xbox 360 and other consoles at that time. So, like I said, folks, EXO is a really big event. They're not going to just create this as like, oh, let's just show like Inside Xbox, have some a couple announcements. No, they're going to go big with this one. And here's the key thing too, that we have to remember this. November 10th is the day that they're going to have this event, EXO 18 in Mexico. That's 5 days before the 17th anniversary of the original Xbox, the launch of that console here in the States. So I think that they are going to take this event and just go crazy. Right now, it's not creating a lot of buzz because I think the people don't know much about this, or people are probably thinking, oh, it's going to be like an Inside Xbox event. But I think they're really going to go big with this one, Paris. I think they're going to just go all out. Now, what are the chances of us seeing something about the next-gen console? Because if you actually think about it, Paris, 2019 is the year where I think if they're planning to launch this in 2020, let's just say, 2019 should be the time that, okay, little preview, show the console, something, an announcement or something.
I think so it's too early.
Be prepared. Too early?
I think it's too early to talk about the next year because, look, the next-gen hardware is probably not coming until November of 2020. So you're talking 2 years ahead of it. They still got to sell Xbox One S's and Xbox One X's during that time. Yeah, they're going to promote all the services and all the great things that we'll see. Because look, we've talked about this many times. Microsoft is gearing up for 2020. That's what all of this stuff is about. Game Pass, just the subscription service they're doing for the hardware, you know, giving the hint that new hardware is coming, all the studio acquisitions, they're gearing up so that when November 2020 hits, Halo's going to probably be there day one. They're going to have a full lineup, full third-party support, this new hardware, which I'm sure will be a monster, not to mention the secondary piece of hardware, which will do the cloud streaming. They're gearing up for that. I think it's too early to keep talking about the next-gen hardware. Phil already gave the hint. They probably will just wait until next E3 to give another hint. So I don't think that's what this event will be about. If anything, they would probably use this event to talk about holiday bundle deals for the 1S and the 1X, you know, discounts, games bundled in. I would think that would make a lot more sense than to basically tell people don't spend any money for 2 years, you know, on hardware. They're not going to do that. Not to mention, I am sure, and I'm sure we'll get to this other big news that came out after we start talking about Xbox, but I'm sure they're really going to push the fact that their backwards compatibility plan, you know, with more titles being added from the original Xbox 360 stuff, all that, more things being added in the Game Pass. I'm telling you, that's to me what this event should be about. And then, yeah, like I said, maybe a hint or two towards some games that we can expect in a couple of years just to keep people excited. But hardware wise, I don't think so. I don't see them doing any hint at that event for the next gen console.
Look, man, we said the same thing about E3 and Phil brought it up out of nowhere. I could see him maybe teasing it again. Maybe that's possible. Just a quick little tease, or they could show games. Don't say, like, let's say Halo Infinite. We've been saying that game is most likely for next gen, but they haven't really announced that that's for next gen. We might see that with their first party titles. Let's say announce some Fable or whatever the next game for 2020, but don't say anything that's for the next gen. Just show the games, like a little quick little trailer or something, but have announcements, because you could tell in that video. The part where they were interviewing Phil Spencer and he was the one that actually brought up about XO, you could tell, man, that he was very happy about announcing that. And they even asked him, so wait, what's going on? Are there going to be any announcements? And he said this, first party, third party, and everything that has to do with Xbox. That's what I brought up about console, Paris. Maybe show, or not show, but just a tease, like the same way how
I'm just going to say I disagree with you for everything that I just said. It is 2 years out from them launching that hardware. Why would you keep hinting at it? You're basically telling consumers, don't buy a 1S or a 1X for 2 years. That's what you're saying. So
I'm now still the console. I'm not saying like tease it, like,
but
how
you keep
did
but they already it. Teased it though. Why would you keep teasing it? You already teased it. Why would you do it again? You've already done it.
All right, so do you agree about the announce the games and don't mention anything that's for next gen? Just announce those games.
Yeah,
some of the games. Yeah,
yeah. Like I said, you just
we're on the same page on that one.
Yeah. But you don't have to say, and it's going to be powered by the next Xbox. And you know, I wouldn't talk about that at all. I would just say the games are coming. Leave it at that.
Yeah. Okay. Now, I think it's time for our predictions, Paris. Here goes Miss Leo predictions.
Hey, darling, this is certified psychic Miss Leo. The guys at Gamertag Radio have pulled me out of retirement to give them some free readings. So I've been using the power of the tarot cards to look into the future, baby. You hear me?
Twinkle, twinkle, little star.
All right, Paris, we had this conversation yesterday. I would start off with this. I think that first party wise, I think Fable will be the right game to announce at this event. Yes, we have seen previous XO events. They have announced and showed Fable, like the older Fables, right before it even came out. They showed at the event. I could see them maybe showing Perfect Dark, games that also were announced. Battletoads, I can see them also showing a little bit of Battletoads. I think it's the perfect time to actually show something of Halo from Halo Infinite. I don't know what else. I think those are the only ones I could come up with right now from the top of the head. But do you have any
well,
games that you would like?
Well, yeah, I pretty much disagree with everything you just said.
Really?
I absolutely would not show anything for Halo right now. Again, it's 2 years down the road. They don't have to show. They already teased it. Why would you start showing gameplay from it? You might as well have done that at E3. They're not going to do that. Again, Fable. Now it's my turn. You say it's my turn to talk. And again, they already hinted at Fable at E3 without naming it. He already hinted at it. That's why I say Joanna Dark. That's the one thing they didn't talk about there. I would show Gears 5. At this event, because it's a game we know is coming next year, so they can show more footage of that, talk about that more, maybe start showing off some more indie titles that particularly you know, may be coming on in 2020. Again, I think this event is about next year, not 2 years from now. They can talk about stuff that's coming in 2019 and then just give a hint at maybe a game or two that's coming down the road. That's why I would say Joanna Dark. Again, maybe a Splinter Cell or something else third-party-wise that they're partnered with that that company, that publisher would be comfortable having it unveiled on the Xbox stage. I think that could happen too. But for Halo, to me, that would be a mistake. Why would you talk about, you just fixed the Master Chief Collection. If anything, I'd be pushing that, you know, and push the fact that it's a part of Game Pass. I would celebrate what's happening with Forza Horizon 4. You know, again, as a part of Game Pass. I mean, if that's what I'm pushing, maybe show off whatever new DLC is coming for Sea of Thieves, things like that. I would emphasize the IPs that people already know about, you know, is coming next year or DLC that's coming next year. Maybe show off more of Ori and the Blind Forest, that sequel, things like that. The Cuphead DLC, whatever. But I would not show them Halo, because to me, Halo is going to be tied to that next gen console because they're going to launch day and date. It just makes too much sense, right? To me, that is their franchise IP. That is the flagship. You want people just highly anticipating it. And I would just give them breadcrumbs. I wouldn't show them any gameplay. I wouldn't. Maybe I just replay the trailer that I showed at E3. I could see that. But I wouldn't give them anything new in 2018. I would wait until E3 of next year to show something else and then start up the marketing campaign late 2019, going into early 2020.
Well, I think that there has to be something Halo related at the event. So right now I was thinking about this. I think this is the perfect time to show a sneak peek of the Halo TV series. Do you think that will make more sense?
Yeah, I can see that. Because that's supposed to come next year, right?
Yeah, yeah, show a little trailer or something. Yeah,
have Steven Spielberg or whoever the head person is just come out. Hey, we're on the set and we're blah, blah, blah. You know, you can easily do that. Mm-hmm. Some concept art of what they're planning to do with it. That I could definitely see.
Now, if I ask you, okay, as a fan of the console, what will be one game that they either announce it, trailer, playable, or whatever, that they show this at EXO that you, as a fan, will get super hype and excited, in your opinion?
What's a game that they could announce?
Yeah, they should announce at this event.
Oh, like I keep saying, Perfect Dark, for me.
Perfect Dark.
Yeah.
I'm surprised you're saying Banjo. No Banjo, Kazooie. You always bring up Banjo.
I'm trying to not talk about it so it can just happen, because I think the more I talk about it, it's not going to happen. Yeah, of course, Banjo would obviously be huge as well, because I would love to see that come back as a platformer, which, like you said, now that you're bringing it up, that's another one that would make sense for me, for them to announce at this. You know, a true Banjo platformer coming back. Oh, people would go insane. They would love it.
I'm excited for EXO, man. I'm very excited. I'm definitely going to be watching it for sure. And do you know exactly what time they're planning to do this? I know it's on a Wednesday.
No, I haven't. I didn't look specific times, but I mean, when we get closer, I'm sure we'll have all that information.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely, man.
Now, one thing, because I'm running out of time, I'm going to have to go, unfortunately. But the other big thing that happened right before we decided to record, PlayStation has an open beta now for Fortnite crossplay across all platforms. This, in my opinion, is huge. And I say it's huge for a number of reasons. Number one, because now everybody, you can play Fortnite, doesn't matter the platform you play it on, everybody can play together. That's obviously huge. Number two, it says to me that our voices do matter. That, yeah, Sony may have been stubborn about it. They may have dragged their feet on it, but they eventually relented. And it goes to show that if we are vocal and we don't, because here's the thing, and you know who you are out there. People are basically telling me to shut up. Oh, why are you bringing this up? This is a waste of time. Blah, 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 blah. Just play it on the PlayStation. No. And that's why I kept saying, no, I will never shut up about this, because it is important for the overall health of gaming that Sony opens up their ecosystem for cross play, or at least cross saves at a minimum, which obviously, you know, I'm a big Destiny fan. They give me cross saves for Destiny. I can play my one set of Guardians across Xbox, PC, and PlayStation 4. I'd lose my mind. But this opens it up now for those possibilities. Bethesda obviously has been big pushing at Sony about, we want cross play. Fallout 76 is coming. They want people to be able to play it everywhere. Doesn't matter what platform you're on. So this is huge. baby steps. Obviously, Sony is focusing on the most popular game in the world right now, as they should, and use that as the test case. But if and when this does succeed and crossplay works for Fortnite, now you get the floodgates open. Now it can happen. Doesn't matter the game. Now these developers can know going in to their development cycle for these games, hey, we third parties, we hit Switch, we'll have crossplay across all our games, you know? Yep. And the only thing that would be a hiccup for this is exclusive content, which, hey, it's just not available on the other platforms. To me, I say it's simple, but there's a lot of coding and things on the back end that have to happen for that. So it's not as easy as just saying, oh, just exclude it, but it can happen. And like I said, mm-hmm. I think in the next couple years, it's just going to start becoming the norm to have crossplay. Doesn't matter if you're on Xbox, PlayStation, ColecoVision, don't matter. Just get to play the games. And that's all that it should be, you know?
Yeah, definitely, man. I think that's a great move from Sony, man. Props to them. And
I don't give them props because this is something that we had to literally yell and scream at them about for months to finally get it done. And ironically enough, it was the popularity of Fortnite, a free game, that highlighted this, you know, Ninja and Drake and just everything that has happened in the past 6 months that forced their hand. They weren't going to willingly do this. They did it because we forced them to do it. Because Bethesda started threatening, well, maybe we just don't bring the next Elder Scrolls to PlayStation, things like that. It took that. The community being vocal, for other third-party publishers to start being vocal, for Sony to actually relent. So they get zero props for this. And same as I would say. They get no applause for this. They didn't do a great thing. They did what they should have freaking done the entire time. Period, point blank. Same as Microsoft did, same as Nintendo did. Period.
That's fine, Paris. But like I said, it's my turn to talk. So I personally will give them props because they listened to the community and the pressure was on, man. They had to make that change and they made a change. And I think
that's exactly why they don't get props for that, because it took pressure. It wasn't, hey, this is a smart move, let's do it. It was, oh crap, our consumers are upset at us now. Our partners are upset at us now. Well, we better do it. That's what this is.
But you know what? They could easily say no, and they will still be selling crazy amount of consoles.
Yep, and then when they get into the next gen, and Microsoft has actually caught up to them, and people have a choice, maybe they'll get a PlayStation next time. That's what all this comes down to. It's all about competition. It really is. Competition makes it better for us, the gamer. Not the corporate, because again, I will say this a million times, people can ride or die for Xbox, PlayStation, Nintendo, Vectrex, or whatever the hell they want. End of the day, they do not care about you. They care about your money. That's what it comes down to.
Of course.
Competition, so they can continue to get your money, they're going to do the things they need to do to compete. Period, point blank. Crossplay is an important thing. Just like I keep telling you, backwards compatibility will be a very important thing for PlayStation going into the PS5.
Definitely, man. Is there anything else, Paris? Because I have to play the interview with Dean Takahashi.
No, this is great. This is great. Again, this is great news. I'm happy to see it. I'm happy for EXO coming back. And again, as gamers, we're the ones that win. So it's a good day for gamers.
Definitely. Definitely, definitely. All right, head over to GamerTagRadio.com. Put your comments and feedback. And also, you could also subscribe to our podcast. You could find us at Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, and other podcast directories. Make sure to just search for Gamertag Radio, and I hope you like the show, all right? So right now I'm going to play the interview with Dean Takahashi. This is like a good 40-minute-plus interview. We talked about everything, about his career, about the video game business, a little bit of Red Dead Redemption 2, and other great topics. So enjoy the interview, and we'll see you until the next episode. We're out. Peace.
Send us your feedback or questions. Give us a call at 786-273-7GTR. Email us at fanmail@gamertagradio.com. Or leave a message on speakpipe.com/gamertagradio.
It It's been 12 years since I have this person right here, Dean Takahashi, man. Well, how you doing, man?
Very good. Yeah, it's been a long time.
The last time you were on our show, you were promoting your book. Uh-huh. What was the name of the book once again?
The Xbox 360 Uncloaked.
Uncloaked. Yes, yeah. I remember that.
That was the second one. The other one was the opening the Xbox, which was out in 2001 or so.
Yeah. Okay, so that one, those two books were more about like the behind the scenes story about how they worked on the console, right?
Yeah, the making of the Xbox and the Xbox 360. Yeah,
yeah. So make sure to check it out, man. It's still available, right? You could buy it.
It's available on Amazon. You can find like used copies around, I think.
Cool, man. So, yeah. But Dean, let's go back, man, because there's probably people that don't know much about you, man. How do you got started into like journalism, man?
Let's see. I started in 1987 working at the Dallas newspaper, the Dallas Times Herald, which was later bulldozed over by the Morning News when they bought it. But I started covering tech in Dallas and moved on to different newspapers. In 1996, I went to the Wall Street Journal, and there was nobody there covering video games. And so I was in the San Francisco office. I was the youngest guy. I was the only guy who played video games. And so I said, yeah, I cover these companies for you.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I covered it from a financial point of view from the very beginning, even though I was more like a fan of video games. So,
right? And this is during the time, what was like the popular games, popular consoles at that time?
I remember like Sega's various consoles were coming out. Sega was going strong against Nintendo. Mm-hmm. Nintendo just announced their like Dolphin project.
Oh my God, Dolphin. Yeah, I remember that. I remember that. That's cool.
So Microsoft was not even in the business yet. It was a fun time. I stayed there a few years. About 10 years ago now, I started working at VentureBeat with Matt Marshall, who started a tech news blog to cover, you know, venture capital, tech news. I thought I was kind of leaving a lot of games journalism behind at that time, but I also started this thing within it called GamesBeat, and it turned out that the investments into games exploded around that time. And there were things like Facebook games and, companies like Zynga. So I never had to leave games behind. Actually, they sort of came to me. And the business of games is sort of what I specialize in, but we've got a few other teammates that also do a lot of reviews and, you know, game culture news. And so we at GamesBeat, we kind of tend to do all things games now.
And when do you think gaming exploded when you started writing? Mm-hmm. What was it during the 90s or was it like 2000s?
I think that for the longest time, it was a reasonably strong business as a PC and console game business. But with Facebook games in 2008, 2007... a new platform started emerging there. And then with the iPhone, 2008, 2009, you started getting a real sort of new platform. And we all know that, the games business is now about $139 billion, according to Newzoo. And $70 billion of that this year is mobile games. So the biggest component of gaming now is mobile games. And it didn't exist 10 years ago, right? And so all of the sort of investment that happened to make mobile gaming grow up like that, that's been huge news for the industry. And then we've got these new sort of legs of the industry, new platforms. We've got virtual reality. We have augmented reality. We have esports. So lots of things that investors other big businesses can get involved in now. So,
and what are your thoughts about this generation compared to the previous one, man, in your opinion, business-wise?
It's turned out to be a very strong console business as well. For Sony, Microsoft, Nintendo, they've sold 140 million consoles in the past 5 years. Mm-hmm. And it's smaller than, say, maybe the 275 million units sold in the previous generation. But that one included the Wii, right? And
yeah.
And the Wii was such a phenomenon of, you know, 100 million plus units that, you know, it's almost more an anomaly for consoles. So I think consoles are still a very strong business. You know, Sony in the lead with 80 million units is a complete turnaround from their disaster with the PlayStation 3.
Yeah.
And so the PlayStation 4 is going strong. And, you know, it's what's interesting this time around is that all platforms are strong. There's so many strong sort of segments of the game business. And you can sort of then expect maybe the companies that are playing in all those platforms should be very healthy companies like Electronic Arts or Ubisoft, right? They're going pretty well.
And what are your thoughts about now? A lot of companies now bringing back the retro consoles, like NES Classic has been doing really good. The Super Nintendo Classic also, and there's rumors that we might see maybe N64 in the future. But now Sony also announced PlayStation Classic also. So what are your thoughts about that? That's another business too, because a lot of gamers our age, a lot of us, they don't like the new consoles. They'd rather stick with the old ones too, man. So. You know, stick with the past.
Well, I think they're learning from Disney, which sort of has perfected the entertainment that is appealing, you know, to kids and little kids, but to their parents as well, because it's like a multi-generational thing for parents that grew up with Disney. They still like it, and you know, they're sort of you know, reminiscent about the good old days or nostalgic, right? Mm-hmm. And that opportunity is also now possible in games. It's a younger media than TV, but still people, you know, have been playing games for 40 years, and now they want to introduce their kids to the games that they played with when they were young, and so that business idea makes a great deal of sense. And I think everybody is going to have an opportunity to remake a console that was a beloved console way back when. You know, you could maybe expect Sega to do something like this as well. And you have Atari trying to do it in a different way in television. You know, Tommy Tallarico is trying to do an Intellivision remake.
Yeah.
So. But Nintendo, I think, has been the most successful of all. And the hard thing for them, I think, is just judging how many units of this kind of thing to make.
Yeah, that's true. What are your thoughts about, because I think you were the one that had the first interview about Atari bringing back, they were going to release a new console. That was like sometime last year. I think they were in E3, right? Yeah. And what are your thoughts about it? Because, you know, it's... I love the idea. I just feel like there's not a lot of information, and a lot of the people that backed the console are still confused. Some of them are even panicking, like, is this a scam or this is real? What?
Yeah, it's been a controversial when, you know, they've done crowdfunding for it, and the CEO of Atari, Fred Chesnais, you know, revealed it to us at E3 more than a year ago now, right? And at that time, there was a guy named Fergal Mack who was sort of running a lot of it. Then he kind of came up with the idea, pitched it to Atari, was in charge of figuring out the design. And the design at that time was not to just do a retro console, but really to do a retro console built into something more modern that was like a Linux-based PC. And having the ability then to play a lot of new games on it, you know, indie games like Terraria, they're trying to go for a combination of modern indie games plus the old Atari stuff. And that's not a bad idea, but, you know, that tends to be a more expensive console, so people care more about the dollars that they're going to invest into this thing through like Kickstarter or something else. Mm-hmm. And so Virgo left and isn't working on it anymore. And Atari's had delays in this whole project. And so people are worried about it, and they're wondering, you know, whether it's really going to come out or not. And, you know, I think it's on Atari to make it happen.
Yeah, and I think it's the communication, too. They've been kind of kind of bad with that, man. The mixed messages and everything, you know, so I agree with that.
Yeah.
Dean, I got to ask you this, man, because I know there was a controversy with you, man. Was it this year? No, actually last year with Cuphead.
Yeah.
How was it for you, man? Because that, that must be, like, stressful, man, being, you know, a gamer. And that game is really tough, by the way. A lot of people don't know. They haven't had a chance to try it out. That game is really, really tough. But how was that experience, man? Getting slammed by the crazy gamers out there, man. That you were like, he's not a true gamer. But you've been playing games since way back, man.
Yeah. It was a very interesting, both negative and positive experience. And you know, to set a little bit of the context, was that I didn't include enough context in my initial posts about this for people to really understand what I was doing or what I was trying to say, right? Mm-hmm. And what happened was, like, I went to Gamescom. I got a chance to play Cuphead for 20 minutes or so, along with a bunch of other games. And I went into it cold. I didn't know anything about it. I knew it was going to be hard simply because the PR guy told me, I couldn't finish this
level. It's going to be tough.
Right?
It's gonna be tough.
And so I said, okay, well. And then I go into it. I start playing the tutorial. And in the tutorial, I was just kind of messing around and not really trying to excel at getting through the tutorial fast. I was recording the whole thing. At the very, very first time I played, I recorded it, right? And then had trouble getting through the tutorial for like 90 seconds or so. And it really made me look kind of stupid as far as like whether I'd ever played a video game before.
Yeah.
But I was trying to just feel out what you could do. Like, you know, like Will Wright used to say that games are a possibility space, and that gamers go knocking on every door because they think one of those doors might actually open and get them some kind of secret Easter egg, right? Mm-hmm. You know that you would never do this in real life, or you would never do this if you had a particular mission, but you just go exploring the edges of the world to see what's possible. So I'm doing some of this in the tutorial, right? And so you're like, okay, that didn't work. Okay, well, I guess I better try something that actually works and get through it. But then I proceed to play for 26 minutes or so, and then the rest of the tutorial, the gameplay is pretty bad as well, because I don't quite understand some of the controls and then what you need to do in order to just survive this first level. So then I post that without any, you know, like I post that on YouTube and I embed that into a post. The post explains in a story, you know, what's going on there and that it's really bad gameplay. But then most people kind of come into it through the YouTube video because there's this, poster out there who says, look, game journalists don't know how to play games. Look at this as an example. Here's 90 seconds of a tutorial played by Dean Takahashi, and it's out on YouTube. And then all these people come in through YouTube into a post that has no explanation about what this is, and they're saying, oh, this guy's trying to review this game and says it's, you know, too hard.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, what does he know about hard? And so then, you know, that post gets like a million views or so. And
oh my God.
It gets, I don't know how many thousands of comments on Twitter about people saying, you know, I should go kill myself because I'm not a gamer.
Yeah. Oh my God.
And, so that then becomes, you know, in some ways I felt there's a certain injustice to it because I was in the context, I was an actual gamer. I'm not a great gamer. I don't review games for a living. I write about the business of games, right? And so there's all this other context in there explaining why I'm terrible at this thing. It was also before the game came out, and so people couldn't just go look at the game and then play it. And,
so a lot of people
and realize
yeah, a lot
that
of people didn't
I'm
have
correct.
A clue.
You know, it is a hard game, right? It's 2 weeks before it came out, and then so for 2 weeks or so, people start going crazy on this thing. And it was interesting, you know, after it came out and after people played it, people said, you know what, Dean wasn't too far off the mark. And there was a point where, you know, it was something like 8% of the people had actually finished the game. People who bought the game, only 8% finished. I think it's gone up since then, right? Some, but it told you how hard it was. And I felt this sort of injustice about game journalism being slammed in this process. I felt bad about that for my, you know, game journalism colleagues, right? So in general, you know, it was a tough experience, but I stayed with it long enough to convince a lot of people that actually I do care about games. I was right that it was difficult. It was hard. A lot of people can't finish this game. And that, you know, people should be nicer on the internet. And so when I did some of these things, people kind of came around to being nicer and to understanding that, hey, you know, it might have been a little unfair of us to judge Dean so harshly, right? But it was an important lesson for me, too, I think, in that to not to overreach on what my expertise is and say, you know, I can look at anything or any game and give a judgment on it just instantly, right? You know, sometimes you do that when you're evaluating tech products or games or whatever. But it, you know, it's a lesson to try to maybe assign that kind of task to somebody who knows that sort of set of games or games like it, plays those a lot. You know, I can stick to reviewing things like first person shooters because I tend to play most of them that come out. There's a lesson in you know, the expertise that you need in order to actually go and evaluate products.
Yeah, I mean, as a journalist, I've been doing this for a long time. What makes you want to keep on going? Because sometimes I go to events, right? A lot of media events, and I notice like a lot of journalists are just tired. They're not. It looks like they're not having fun anymore. As someone that's been doing it for a long time, what keeps it going, man, for you?
Well, I think part of their problem, I don't count myself in that kind of group, but maybe part of their problem is they get required to play a lot of games that they don't like. They have to go from one review to the next one to the next one. And, you know, that's kind of a soul-crushing task to try to find something in a game that you got to play for 30 hours that you really don't like. And, you know, no gamer actually has to do that. They can drop a game that they don't like, but a reviewer can't. Yeah. They have to actually finish what they play. I tend to review fewer games, write a lot more about the business of games, and so I play the games that I love to play, and I play them from start to finish, and I review those ones, and I think that keeps me fresh. But the other thing that keeps me fresh is that I'm always continuously surprised by things that happen in games that I didn't expect to happen. And you know, it's kind of like interviewing somebody different every day and getting a different perspective on things and hearing you know, somebody with a fresh idea get very enthusiastic about it. And, you know, so there's things now like games and blockchain or games and artificial intelligence and things that are sort of blending the world of games with some other thing around the world in entertainment or technology. And you get things out of that like virtual reality or augmented reality. And, you know, the freshness of that and the fact that people can still start these, you know, billion-dollar ideas or billion-dollar companies within a business that is 40 years old, and go up against the giants and succeed. You know, that's gets you up in the morning.
Yeah. And what are your thoughts about Telltale Games, man? You know, that some people say it's getting shut down. Some are saying there's not. What are your thoughts about that part of the business too? Because I, as somebody from the outside, I thought everything was great. You know, they were getting a lot of licenses from different companies, from DC Comics, also the Walking Dead series.
Yeah, I think we all thought they were in good shape, and that you know, it's hard to tell, though, because they're a private company and they didn't have to disclose any, you know, profits or revenues. They did raise a lot of money from venture capitalists that caused them to go down a certain road of big an expansion as they could do, or as ambitious a plan as they could do. And they expanded quite rapidly to 350 people within a relatively short time after the success of The Walking Dead in 2012. And by 2016 or so, you know, they went from small company to 350 people. They took a lot of licenses, and licenses can be very healthy and good, like The Walking Dead, or they can be very dangerous if they don't work out. And if, you know, there's a traditional Hollywood tactic of requiring people to pay minimum guarantees to them if they're going to take a license. And so, you know, you may have to do $1 million a month in revenue, and that's fine if you do it. But if you don't, you still have to pay $1 million to the Hollywood company that gave you that license. And so even in a unsuccessful game, you may lose even more money than you ordinarily might lose because of the license requirements. Mm-hmm. And so I don't know whether that was a factor. I think that Telltale made the mistake of sitting still on their technology, and that all of their games started to look the same way. Mm-hmm. You know, The Walking Dead animations from 2012 were not that good. You know, people didn't care about that because the stories mm-hmm. associated with that were so good. And then they tried to crank out this story game factory and not really update, you know, the tech to have more modern graphics or more modern animations. And then we saw with things like with Life is Strange that the graphics were better, right?
Yeah,
in that
yeah.
that particular storytelling game from the French studio. They did a very good job at Don't Nod, creating a more modern look to a storytelling game. And you know, they sold like 8 million units or so with that.
Wow.
And, you know, it was a pretty big success in a field that Telltale should have owned, right? And Telltale kind of let somebody else get ahead of them, and their own games then by comparison I think started looking a little stale.
And I think they were working on a new engine, I believe. There were plans to do that, but I guess we never got
to
see that.
Yeah, there's rumors they were working on this Stranger Things game and that this was going to look good. But when you have 350 people, you burn through a lot of money really quickly. And if your current games you know, aren't selling enough to justify that, then they shut down. I think the thing that shocked everybody was that they still had, you know, 250 people or so. You know, they had a layoff last year of 90 people or so. They still had 250 people, and then they cut it now to just 25. They go from 250 to 25.
That's big.
And they give no severance to any of those 225 people they just cut. They just told them, I'm sorry, but your jobs are over right now. And that has caused a lot of furor among game developers who feel like, well, maybe it's time for, you know, some kind of union or some kind of protection against this kind of very bad practice. You know, in the U.S., you can do this. In California, it's a very high cost of living. A lot of these people are living paycheck to paycheck in California. And it's pretty sad that, you know, they didn't end this more gracefully, right? They could have shaved more of the staff. But kept more of the people and tried to focus more, and they could have given people more notice and more, just a couple weeks of pay or something like that, right?
Yeah,
but so this is a big shock for that. It's a shock for the San Francisco games ecosystem as well, where, you know, if a lot of those people go out on the market, you know, you do have to wonder whether it makes sense to make games in San Francisco or to go someplace overseas instead.
Mm-hmm. Right? Yeah, that's true. And okay, so let's talk about the current consoles right now.
Mm-hmm.
2020 mm-hmm. rumors is that we might see the next gen consoles coming up for PlayStation mm-hmm. and also for Xbox.
Mm-hmm.
Do you see that happening? Do you think it's too soon? Do you think it's like the right time for mm-hmm. Microsoft and Sony to announce their consoles or what?
I think it is true that the console cycle that we were accustomed to is now all screwed up, right?
Yeah, it's always changing. That's what I'm saying.
Like
yeah.
Nintendo, you know, they cut theirs short with the Wii U because it failed, right? Yeah. And so they had to get that out of there as soon as they could. And so they just introduced their new console in March of 2017. And, you know, they may go for 5+ years before they need another one. And generally, yeah, they want to go for that long a time because you need that amount of time to just recoup the investment in hardware and all of the semiconductors and everything that you've designed for this over time. And I think, you know, Sony and Microsoft had their refreshes of their console, like the PlayStation Pro. Sony also introduced the PSVR to sort of provide midlife kickers to their console to extend the life of it. So then you don't really know exactly when they're going to run out of gas, I think. And when they start seeing declines in console sales, then you know that they will pull the trigger on making sure that, you know, they have a replacement for it. And I would think 2020 sounds about right for these new consoles. I don't have any inside information on, you know, when they're really going to move. I think, you know, it would be nice if they could wait for something that introduces a really new experience, it's sort of like timing it to a technology, like timing it to 4K TVs or timing it to HD TVs or timing it to the, you know, new kind of DVD, et cetera. That kind of thing has happened in the past. And I don't know whether it's timing it to the best, most practical VR goggles that might be possible. Microsoft has backed off a bit on their whole investment in VR because of the failures of things like the Rift out there, right? So I think there has to be a lot of things that come together, and like gamers lose their enthusiasm for the current generation. New technology has to come along, and just economically, somebody has to decide to make a big investment before you see another console generation.
Do you think it makes sense for Microsoft to beat first, to release their console first, then Sony? Because I feel like Sony is comfortable. They're selling a lot of units. They're not slowing down anytime soon.
Yeah. Yeah, Sony has no incentive to end that situation.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Right?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. But Microsoft, I see them as, compared to like the previous consoles, I think this generation, it started really bad. And then it started, now it's like, it's doing really good now.
Yeah.
But
does
it make sense for them to release their console first than Sony? Or what, in your opinion, is from the business side?
So the interesting history to that is, you know, that Microsoft, when they introduced the Xbox, Sony had sold 25 million units of the PlayStation 2 by the time Microsoft sold its first Xbox. And in that generation, they were very late. And for 4 years, they lost money, right? And they had to then, as number two in the market, get to the next generation as soon as possible. So they were Microsoft was motivated by losses to start working on the Xbox 360 right away. And in their slide decks as they were preparing for this, they made note of this. You know, we were late. If we had been there at the very beginning of the PlayStation 2, we could have matched their sales. We could have made money in this generation. If we just shifted over by like a year and a half, when we started selling. And so they took this lesson into account in making the Xbox 360, which launched in 2005 before the PlayStation 3 launched in 2006. Seems like a great idea, right? But then, you know, you had the red rings of death.
Which was really
flaws
bad.
A poorly designed console that was rushed to market too soon, right? And that cost Microsoft $1 billion, right? Probably could have negated a lot of the profits of that actual generation.
And they weren't even sure if they were going to go release another console after that because of the Red Ring of Death.
So then you take those two lessons into account and you go like, oh, okay, do I want to be first or do I, you know? And, you know, with only three players, there's a lot of game theory that goes into this and whether or not you're playing a game of chicken with somebody, right? And know, who's going to blink first and decide, okay, I'm kind of losing. Maybe I better double down and make a bigger bet here.
Yeah. I don't know. I think they're probably going to release their mm-hmm. console first, I think, mm-hmm. just because mm-hmm. they don't want to take that risk to release the at the same time as Sony, mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. then probably a lot more people are probably going to... I mean, the fans are going to buy their favorite consoles, right? Yeah.
And they can look to Nintendo and say,
exactly.
You know, the Switch came out at the right time. You know, they ended it early. They came out in the middle of a cycle. And it's very successful because they had the right design. You know, they had a design that resonated with a lot of people.
Yeah, and the reason why I'm asking that to you is because mm-hmm. at E3, Phil Spencer mm-hmm. kind of hinted mm-hmm. during the press conference, which I was not expecting that at all. I was like, mm-hmm. oh, I thought they were going to just talk about games. But he mentioned about the next generation console. Like, why would he do that mm-hmm. in 2018, two years before... Mm-hmm. the rumor of the release of the next console.
And he kind of dropped a couple of options. Like he said, well, yeah, we're going to do real console hardware, but maybe we're going to give this cloud gaming idea a spin as well. And cloud gaming is really a shift into the cloud and software running on any machine, right? Running it on your old hardware or running it on your mobile device, running it on your PC. And so like you're sort of... saying that with cloud gaming, the potential is there for the end of hardware, right? The end of a generations of new hardware. You simply virtualize this console into the cloud and you can run games anywhere on any device. That's always the promise of cloud gaming, and it could one day spell the end of a new console generation coming out every 4 years or so, or 5 years. Mm-hmm. But, you know, he also said, well, maybe we'll do hardware as well.
So and, it's probably, you know, we have an option then.
Yeah, so so maybe you can do two different ideas at the same time and see which one really sticks. Like maybe the hardware will have some kind of VR associated with it, mm-hmm. you know, if VR becomes sort of ready for prime time. And, you know, I think that you know, we are still going to get dedicated hardware machine, dedicated consoles. We may not need them forever. You know, if you think about the advances that are happening with the internet and things like 5G, you know, high speed wireless internet coming into your home, you know, that'll disrupt cables, but it also means that you get the computing power of a data center in your home. Why do you need hardware in your home if you can just tap that data center, right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but I'm afraid about the mm-hmm. internet speed compared mm-hmm. to mm-hmm. other countries. We're kind of low, man. Uh-huh. So in a way, why would I pay for a streaming console? Mm-hmm. I'd rather just get a regular console, mm-hmm. keep it old school, download my games mm-hmm. digitally instead of streaming. I just don't feel that
I think a lot of the world will have different options than, you know, like certainly in places where the internet is slow, you got to have a dedicated console. In places where the internet is really fast, you know, think of places like South Korea. Do they really need that piece of hardware in their homes? Or could they effectively get a new console by using cloud gaming and a data center? And the data center gets updated every year or two and gives them new, brand new capabilities so that they never have to buy a PC gaming machine or never have to buy a console again.
So what is it that you're playing now? When you take a break from writing about the business.
Let's see. Well, I've taken up Spider-Man.
That's a great game.
Small percentage of the way through that one. Somebody else reviewed that for us, so I just took it up on my own free time.
Yeah.
I did play all the way through the Shadow of the Tomb Raider, and I thought that was good. You know, I think it was a nice way to end a trilogy about rebooting Lara Croft, and I was happy with it. It was very familiar gameplay by this third time around. I was kind of worried about what happens next with Lara and whether she becomes this, you know, braggart, swaggering Angelina Jolie-like character who's way overconfident and not vulnerable anymore.
Yeah.
So the likable Lara Croft, I think, is part of this whole trilogy that I liked it a lot. I'm looking forward to Red Dead Redemption 2.
You know, I'm excited for that. Do you get to play it or not really?
I got to play it for last week for
2 hours, I believe,
90 minutes or so, yeah.
So how was it, man? Was it a PlayStation version, right, that they had? Or
I played it on a PlayStation 4.
And, PlayStation 4 card.
Yeah, Pro. And it was really good. It was really what you'd expect out of the next evolution of a Rockstar game from... You know, starting with Red Dead Redemption and getting through the lessons of Grand Theft Auto V, to a very focused story-based world, where things happen in this open world that feel like they're almost like scripted events, but you know they're actually not scripted. There's sort of this behavior to the world that reacts to you and how you play. And the example is when I accidentally shot a dog when I was supposed to use the L2, you know, it's the skillful gamer thing coming back here, but I hit R2 instead of L2, and so instead of petting the dog, I shot it.
Oh my god.
And then, you know, this guy witnesses it, he goes running off to the sheriff comes to me and wants to get me out of town or arrest me, and I don't walk out of the town fast enough, and so the sheriff starts shooting at me.
Holy
and then
shit.
Fired back at the sheriff, and I killed the sheriff, and then five other people come chasing after me, and I shoot them, and I'm doing okay, and I think, okay, I'm all right. But then, like, you know, 15 more come at me, and then they overwhelm me, and they kill me, and they kill my horse, too, and I think I missed my horse out of that, but when I come back to life, there's a bounty on my head of, like, $250, and I have to go straight to the post office to pay that off. Otherwise, more people are going to come after me. And then as I'm walking through town after I pay this bounty, I walk past these people, and they give me these kind of dirty looks.
Oh, my
and
God.
I get to the stable, and the guy says to me, you know, before I introduce myself or anything, he says, oh, it's you. Like, you know, I've been branded as the dog killer or something. Yeah,
everybody knows you already. But that's that, in a way, it's good that that happened, though, because you see how their environment, like everybody in the game, like how they change based on your actions. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah. So your reputation actually matters in this game. And then, you know, it kind of gets away from that whole notion that people criticize the Rockstar games for, which is you can be so violent, right? But now they're introducing things into this world that actually restrain you from being totally out of control. Because if your reputation matters and you don't want to be known as the dog killer, then, you know, you have to actually behave accordingly, right? And so you have to behave yourself in these worlds or you're not going to survive.
Now, if you go to another town, will that also go around, or is just in that particular area? Do you know?
I think the bounty will stay with you. It's kind of like in the Assassin's Creed now where, you know, the mercenaries will come after you because they know there's a bounty on your head.
Right? I got to get this money. Go after you. All right.
It's almost like as if they have the internet in these Western towns, and like the picture of your bounty gets to every sheriff's office in the instantaneously in the world or something.
Yeah. We're almost going to wrap it up, but a quick question about your thoughts about Anthem. I'm kind of iffy about the whole game, man, because I feel like BioWare is not really giving us the right presentation. During E3, I feel like their presentation was kind of weak. But behind closed doors, people that actually got to play it had a great time. What are your thoughts about Anthem overall?
Well, because of the way EA did E3, I didn't have time to go visit EA so easily and play through that whole Anthem thing. So I got to see the version that everybody else saw. And I think they are probably going to struggle with the thing that Rockstar seems to have solved, which is like, here's how you do a narrated scripted story within an open world. And the way they've described this as like an open world where you can do missions reminds me of, you know, something like Ghost Recon Wildlands, where, you know, you get distracted from your main mission by having to do, you know, some kind of unimportant delivery to somebody in some distant province or something.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's like that's not exactly fun. Is that if you get taken off the thing that is emotionally compelling as a story for you? You know, I sort of appreciate, you know, I'm a gamer. I like playing for a long time. I like some large open worlds. But I don't like to play for 100 hours on a 45-minute story just to find out what happens at the end of that story, right? Mm-hmm. And so I think they have to be very careful of that with Anthem, that, that you know, somehow there's enough direction that they're going to give into this open world.
Well, my last question, mm-hmm. Nintendo Switch Online just launched, the service just launched last week. Do you think this is going to be a good thing for Nintendo, bad thing? I just don't like some of the things from the service. Like, I don't like the online voice chat through mobile. I think it should have been in part of the console. But you think it's going to be a success for Nintendo? I mean, they're probably going to start slow and then maybe make some changes throughout the year.
I mean, it does feel like Xbox Live in 2002.
Yes,
it's like they're beginning to learn about online. You know, Xbox Live took more than a year before it became viable and interesting, and there was enough behind it that you could, you know, justify subscribing to it. And mm-hmm. I think Nintendo has the same situation here, so I wouldn't quite judge it right at the opening, but maybe about a year from now. But yeah, it does feel like they're just beginning to learn some of the things that have been standard, you know, in PC games or PlayStation and Xbox games for quite a long time.
I think you should write another book, man. I think you should do that because it was the original Xbox 360. I'm surprised you didn't do it for this one, for the Xbox One. Maybe in the future for the next console, you see that happening? Yeah. Or
I mean, I think part of that depends on the access and whether people really do want to cooperate. Part of it is that I have a very different kind of job now where, you know, sometimes I write 10 stories in a day and at midnight I'm still working on them. And, you know, it's very different from the days when you wrote 3 stories a week and then you had some leftover time to dedicate to writing a book. And then I think also, you know, deciding to zero in and focus on one part of the industry for a long time, I don't know that is really what I want to do right now. It's okay. Looking across all of the industry and seeing all the things that are happening from blockchain to next generation consoles to PC games and Steam, you know, so many avenues of innovation that are happening in games that it's easy to be distracted and very hard to focus on something, you know, for a long time. So yeah. I don't know if I'm going to do more of these book-like things.
All right. Well, Dean, I want to say thanks, man. Hopefully we'll get you again in 12 years from now.
That'd be good.
But
see how wrong I was.
So you want to mention your Twitter or website people can check out? You want to check out your
writing? I'm Dean Tack on Twitter. Venturebeat.com is our website. Gamesbeat.com is our game-focused Gamesbeat website. I also help organize the Gamesbeat conferences. We do those once a year. Our next one is April 23rd and 24th in Los Angeles, and we're going to do it at Two Bit Circus, the micro amusement park started by Nolan Bushnell's son, Brent Bushnell. And we get a couple hundred people from the industry to talk about all things related to games and games business.
Cool. Wow, well, thanks a lot, Dean.
Mm-hmm. All right. Thank
all right. You. Cool.
Listening to Gamertag Radio. Be sure to like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter.
Thank you for listening to Gamertag Radio. If you'd like to donate and help us out for future events and more coverage and also better audio equipment, head over to donate.gamertagradio.com. That's donate.gamertagradio.com. Thank you.